We are going to get started. You are attending session 357 titled Happily Ever After, Lessons from Mixed Faith Marriage. So if I can just remind everybody after lunch, just silence your cell phones. All five of us. Right.
I like that answer.
As you listen today, we invite you to explore what it means to be Mormon. Who gets to carry that label? What does the history say? What does the theology say? At this conference, we encourage you to explore what it... we already said that. We'll say it again. We explore what it means to be Mormon. We ask you to reflect on your own Mormon interactions and hold the good and the bad together to create a more full, complete personal narrative. In doing this, we allow others to do the same. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. Please consider purchasing Sunstone merchandise to support Sunstone, including tradable lanyard pins with prominent figures in Mormonism. There are also a wide variety of popular Sunstone chapsticks, mugs, bags, and more. This session is 90 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can allow for the next session to start on time. As a courtesy to other presenters and our attendees, we ask that immediately after this session, you clear the room and speak outside so other presentations can begin preparations for the next session. So, this session, the little bio for it is, how does your relationship with the church affect your relationship with your spouse? This session presents stories and strategies for making mixed faith marriages work from people who are in them. So, Mallory, with awesome hair, left the LDS church 5 years ago while her husband remains faithful. With their three children, they have been working to come together as a family with their different levels of faith after finding their way back from the brink of divorce. Scotty is her husband, is a 32-year-old security professional and ABM, which ABM stands for Active Believing Mormon, whose wife left the church a few years ago. Anthony Miller is a business owner and educational enthusiast. He traversed a faith crisis that began after stumbling across the LDS Church History Gospel Topic essays while searching for resources to support his adult gay son. Anthony frequently contributes to online support groups about faith transitions and blogs at unpackingambiguity.com. And Nicholas R. Stewart has a Master of Urban Planning degree from San Jose State. He grew up in the Mormon Church, got married in the Los Angeles Temple, and served in four Elders Quorum presidencies. He is no longer an active believing member of the LDS Church. So, if you'll give your attention to these wonderful people.
Good afternoon. My name's Nick. Nicholas in the program, call me Nick's fine. So I'm kind of the one who made this session happen. I've been coming to Sunstone now for a couple of years. This is my third year. When I came 2 years ago, I had a good time. Came last year, had a great time, did one session. And between last year and this year, I kind of thought to myself, like, in the spaces that I inhabit, largely online, in the ex-Mormon, post-Mormon, however you want to phrase it, communities, what are some of, like, the common issues that people have? And there's a lot of, you know, concern coming out from people who have left the church about, being married to someone who is still active believing, being able to, you know, express their feelings about, you know, their new feelings about the church and really, you know, compared to their spouses. And that was something that I didn't really see on display at Sunstone the last 2 years necessarily, so I figured I'd do a panel. I was fortunate enough to find some people who are probably a little smarter and a little better at this than I am. I know Anthony is, for sure. and he gives me a little bit of crap for it, but he's pretty great. Mallory's really good, too. Scotty, I've just met, but if he's married to Mallory, I'm pretty sure he'll be good, too. As for me, I did grow up in the Mormon church, and I never really believed, though. So my Mormon experience was very different, and that I was never really all in. But I did get married, as my little blurb says. I got married in the Los Angeles Temple 10 years and a week ago, ish. And my wife is still somewhere on the believing end of the spectrum, though currently inactive. So when I first came out to my... Why are the lights off? Cool. So it was a couple years back, three or four maybe. As long as the mic works, I'll keep talking. it was a couple of years ago that I told my wife kind of my feelings about the church. And I don't think it was a secret to her necessarily, because I'm not the kind of person that like can't not say certain things. But what helped, for me, it was when the ordained women stuff was going on and Kate Kelly got excommunicated, and my wife, that bothered my wife. And so I was like, that means that she's, a little more liberal minded than I thought. And I thought she was fairly liberal minded, but that opened a door for me to start talking to her about some of my own feelings. So fast forward a little bit, I haven't been attending church at all in, almost 2 years now. And I think that my role here in this group is a lot of, what not to do. Cause I was not great, with everything, in this process. We can talk more about that later. But as I said, it's been about 2 years since I've been going to church at all. It's been great for me. And I think a lot of ways it's been actually good for my wife, because I was miserable on Sundays when I was going to church, when I was trying to do the right thing by going. We used to have this ritual, I like to call it, where we would go out to the car after church. I was normally there first because she was playing Postlude and Relief Society. And she would come out to the car, she would get in the car and be like, so how bad was it today? Because I was always just upset, except for the one Sunday month I taught Elders Quorum, so I controlled the lesson. But I was almost always just upset after spending 3 hours at church. So while I think that there's a lot of grief on her end about the fact that, things have changed, our relationship has changed, there's potentially eternal consequences to that, if you believe that. But the fact that I'm noticeably happier, I think, has made her feel better about it. So I just kind of want to start with that for myself. And I think we'll do a lot of mic passing. But for now, I can just say that we're in a pretty good place. And I will probably chime in when people say things, and I'll be like, and that's a good way, because what I did was bad. So.
Thanks, Nick. So my parents joined the church when I was three, and I grew up in the Phoenix area of Arizona. And my parents were extraordinarily black and white Orthodox believing members. Like, we would read Mormon doctrine, Bruce R. McConkie's book, for like family home evening. And when I was a teenager, my parents sent me to Cleon Skousen workshops and stuff like that. So we were super black and white believing Mormons. And one thing that I think that we'll come back to, or maybe allude to, is that in a lot of other faith traditions, we have a higher degree of comfort with differentiation, where people can have different beliefs or different constructs and so forth. So like, if you are in an evangelical Christian church, you go and you listen to the sermon, and everybody in the congregation can listen to that and interpret it in their own way, and it doesn't cause as much heartache. But in Mormonism, we're taught that there's this particular formula that if you follow, everyone's going to end up with the exact same experience, and we need to get up, and it's cultural, of course, but we get up and we share the exact same testimony, and we teach from the same lesson manual, and there's this expectation that everyone's going to have the same experience. And so we have a really hard time with differentiation, although the secret is that we're all in mixed faith marriages, even when we're both active believing, because we interpret things differently. So an example of differentiation that's not painful, well, it is until people learn how to navigate it, is that people, if you've heard of the five love languages by Gary Chapman, there are people for whom, like me, love and emotional intimacy is physical touch and words of affirmation. And that's how I express and receive expressions of emotional intimacy. And for my wife, it's quality time and acts of service, which are like Greek languages to me. But I've learned to become fluent so that we can have that emotional intimacy. But it's once we learned how to navigate that differentiation, it's not painful. It's not like, oh, I'm so threatened and my heart is breaking because love is quality time to my wife, right? But when it comes to matters of faith, when we experience that differentiation, it becomes way more painful because there's this idea that we're supposed to be the same and believe the same if we follow the same formula. So in any event, 27 months ago, our now 25-year-old son came out to us as gay. I went online and searched for resources as to how to support him because in my heart, I felt like he didn't choose it and that God wouldn't want him to live a life absent the kind of emotional connection and intimacy that my wife and I share. And in doing that, that weekend, I stumbled across the Gospel Topics essays and the CES letter and Mormon Think and Mormon Stories and the Fair Mormon topic of all the things that they address, and was totally bombed over that weekend and went into a very acute faith crisis, existential faith crisis that resulted in significant grieving, and the grieving stages of grief included anger and depression. While my wife is a very nuanced but very strong, active believing member, she's currently the first counselor in the Stake Relief Society presidency, and she's an ordinance worker. And over these last 27 months, we've somehow been able to nourish and grow our marriage, and we'll talk about that, I guess, if subject comes up. But there were periods of time that were extremely painful, this differentiation that we experienced, and that why couldn't she interpret things the same way that I was, and her view of why can't you just be more patient, that these things will work themselves out in the end, and so forth. So, but in any event, we're making it work, and our marriage is better than it actually was before my faith crisis. I'm no longer a member. I resigned in January, and she fully supports me in my faith journey, and I fully support her as an ordinance worker and in the Stake Relief Society presidency, because somehow we've been able to navigate that it's not painful to experience that differentiation. So that's where I'm coming from.
All right. I'm Mallory Tallman, and I think I get to have the honor of presenting this dual perspective here because my husband was willing to join me for this session. I was raised in the church. My dad was a bishop when I was a teenager. I was like the one who was always raising my hand with the answers in Sunday school. I went to EFY and girls camp, just like very, very involved. And then 6 years ago, through my involvement in the home birth community, I was introduced to Mormon feminism, and the Wear Pants to Church Day or event is kind of what kind of gave me that kick into my own faith crisis. And I tried really, really hard to make my life work in the church for 4 years after that. And 2 years ago, I ended up stopping, like removing myself from attending church and kind of giving myself permission to explore my own beliefs outside of this, the Mormon paradigm that I had been raised in.
I gave you permission.
Yeah. I'm hoping Scotty will give his perspective of how this whole story went down on his end. But when I first started my faith crisis, I was like, I'm a talker. Whenever something happens in my life, I have to talk about it and get it out, kind of obsessive. And so I was doing that with Scotty, like every single thing, like, oh my gosh, I need to talk about this. And he was trying his hardest to be so supportive of that. And it got very, very difficult for him to continually hear all of those things that I was having issues with over the years. And there was a point after I had stopped going to church where I was becoming more bold in my personal beliefs and what I wanted or didn't want. And we kind of went head to head on the tithing issue. And that kind of made us both think that we weren't willing to go on or that we couldn't handle the differences anymore. And we did talk a little bit about divorce. And I don't know, this is a little bit of a tender issue, I think, but Scotty actually called my mom, and she drove 8 hours to come to our house and be with our kids. And by the time she had got to our house, we had decided that we were going to try to work things out together. And luckily, we did, and things have been getting better and better every day since then. But it was very eye-opening, or kind of like a shocking moment, like to come to that. Like, are we willing to work it out, or is this the end, and we have to go our separate ways? And we have 3 children, so I mean, it would be a very complicated thing to end our relationship, and especially after so many years of marriage. Well, relatively, how many years ago? It was like 9 years of marriage, which seems like a long time when you get married so young, like we did. But it was really hard to admit that I was at fault in this. Well, I mean, we both are. I think that's one thing that has been really difficult, to like swallow my pride and be like, I have caused pain to the people in my lives, the relationships with not just my husband, but also with my family, my parents, my sisters, and stuff like that, and kind of try to take responsibility for that. And now I feel like it's important for us to talk about our experiences to try to help other people to get through, or help them find resources to improve their own relationships. So I'm going to let Scotty tell a little bit of his story.
Okay. So I'm actually used to talking at events, but unless it's about computer games or hacking. I do a lot of stuff with DEF CON and the security community and as a whole. So this is kind of new in terms of topic.
Softer.
It's
not hard data.
Yeah, it's not as analytical. I was also raised in the church. Air Force, I moved around a lot. I was born in Japan. My first time in the U.S. was Biloxi, Mississippi. Mallory and I met in Ohio. I actually dated her older sister. no, that's just one of the ways we like to tell it, because it's funny. Really, I went on 2 dates with her, and it was pre-mission, so it doesn't count. and I never dated any girl twice in a row, so it really doesn't count. But my first time meeting Mallory was on a date with her sister, and I took her restaurant hopping, and we went and got all these different desserts and took cookies home, and Mallory ate all the cookies that were meant for her and her 2 other sisters. So that was my first experience with Mallory.
I've always been a rebel.
Yeah. I served my mission in Argentina, and I was a temple worker, doing both temple laundry and ordinance work when Mallory and I met and got married. We got married in the Columbus, Ohio temple, and I've always been an active believing member, so that's the difference on the panel. Is I'm the active one here. I don't know how to term it. Is it ABM?
Yeah, active believing.
Term it however you want.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
I'm not a huge fan.
Okay. Fair enough. I struggled with Mallory's faith crisis. Finally, she was just tearing herself apart, and I think I was the one that actually suggested she take a break. I did not realize where that would lead. And really, it took both of us realizing that we can't exercise unrighteous dominion. And that was really one of the things that drove us apart, was when I was asked to stop paying tithing. And that almost ended our marriage. And she told you the rest of that. And then whenever I don't feel like I have control over things, I make lots of drastic changes. And so I sold our house and found a new job and made us move all the way from North Carolina to here, mostly for work and support group. And she didn't want to go to Ohio because she didn't want her, or Utah either, because she didn't know how family would react to her changes. And I made us come anyway. I bribed her with a trip to Scotland that we went on last month. And honestly, the move was, it was the right decision, because things only got better since we've moved here. So anyway, I guess we'll open it up for questions now. Or?
Yeah. So first of all, I just want to say, you know, Scotty, thank you a lot for being here. You know, I think it's definitely easier for some of us, who might feel like the sort of venue here at Sunstone is more in our wheelhouse, and I'm sure it's probably a little outside of yours, as you said, and so I definitely appreciate you coming. I think it's really important that...
I'm not comfortable with that.
Oh, hey. I'm glad you're here, regardless. I think it's important that we don't just hear the voices that are like our own. I think it's important that we hear from the full spectrum. That's part of the whole thing with Sunstone, is there's kind of a lot of different types of people here. And I think we're having a discussion about mixed faith marriage when possible. It's great to have someone who's not on the I left the church side. And that's one of the reasons that I went to one of my Facebook groups, actually a couple of them, and was like, hey, this idea for a session I have, I would love to get someone, and if you have, you know, if you're active, believing, however you want to phrase it, partner would be willing to participate as well, that would be excellent. Scotty was the only one that volunteered, or was volunteered. I'm not quite sure how that happened, but he's here.
I volunteered.
Okay, but he's here. So I think that, I think because it has come up, I think it's might be good to kind of talk about some of the issues that kind of end up being sticking points when changes in levels of faith or belief happen. And, you know, tithing came up. I know that's a common one that I see discussed in the various online groups that I'm in. You know, one person, sometimes even while they're still attending, but they've just, you know, started reading things and they feel less comfortable about, you know, paying tithing for whatever their reason is. And then that is a negotiation that has to happen. And so I think it might be nice to hear, you know, you guys have kind of started talking about that yourself.
So I don't think it was the fact that it was tithing. I think it was the fact that I felt like I wasn't being allowed to live my faith and my beliefs the way I wanted to. And usually it's been about, okay, you're changing and you want to believe and live your life the way you want to live it. It goes both ways, and you have to be willing to let the other half live the way they want to live too.
So this is actually something that Scotty and I discussed just the other night. Since moving to Utah, I have made a lot of choices that are outside of the Mormon realm. I got a tattoo. I started drinking coffee and tea and other things, and it's been quite an adjustment. But I was using the example of something that's innocuous in our own relationship. Like, I wear tank tops a lot in the summer, and I don't think that is quite as big a deal now because it's been a few years. But Scotty reminded me that the choices that I make influence those around me. And I think there's like a boundary issue that we needed to kind of figure out with that, where, like, with the tank top thing, I was telling Scotty, like, I can wear tank tops myself, and if you really, really hate that, then I can personally, like, see how emotionally damaging that might be for you, how difficult it is, like what kind of a struggle it brings up for him, like if it really bothers him, I can make the choice to not wear tank tops, or I can continue, even though it might make him a little uncomfortable. But the things I can't do, like I can't force him to wear a tank top himself. I can't buy tank tops every day, all the time, like spend all of our family's money on buying tank tops. Like those types of choices like have extend more and affect my family and those around me even more. So, and I think that has been something that's been difficult for us, like finding where that balance is between like me being able to make my own decisions that don't necessarily follow Mormon values, and then also not make these decisions that are going to be damaging to our relationship or our family.
So I referred to the five love languages before, and one of the things that you'd learn in the book, The Five Love Languages, is that demands are generally counterproductive and requests are better. So if my wife said, we haven't gone on a date this week, if you don't take me out on a date, I'm not going to hold you when you're waking up in the morning, like that's not really productive. But if my wife expresses, I'd really like it if we could just the two of us go out to dinner and a movie tonight or something like that, that would mean a lot to me, then it's a request rather than a demand. And so we already had that tool set basically in our relationship of requests rather than demands. And then the second thing was from Stephen Covey's book about effective families, highly effective families. And he explained in the book that the majority of family arguments tend to be about winning or they devolve into things about winning the argument and being respected or disrespected as opposed to how important something really is to someone. And so he suggests in the book that if there's a misunderstanding or a disagreement, to use a scale of 1 to 10 to express how important something is to someone. So, for example, if I went to my wife post-faith transition and said, I would really like it if I could buy a Keurig coffee maker for our home, and she said, well, I don't know how comfortable I am with that, then I could say, well, it's like a 6 to me that I could do that, and she might say, well, my number's a 5, and since yours is a 6, then it's fine. Or she might say, it's an 8 to me that you don't, because I'm not comfortable yet having visiting teachers come over and have our house smell like coffee or something like that, as an example of how to use the scale of 1 to 10. And it's been really helpful for us. Our kids learned it, and so because over the years when they were growing up, our kids are 20 and 25 years old now, but they saw us use it in negotiating as well, and we would express that with them. With regard to the topic of tithing, my wife chose to be a stay-at-home mom and then had all sorts of callings in the church, and she's a gym rat. She goes to the gym a couple hours a day. And that's her word, not mine. And when it came to the issue of tithing, since I'm the primary breadwinner, it was something that we needed to negotiate. And so what we did is we negotiated, and our solution was we looked at if she got certified as a trainer and went and worked at the gym as a trainer, about how much money would she make. And so I said, well, what if the amount of tithing that you would normally pay on that amount of money, we go ahead and pay that amount of tithing for you each year so that you can feel like you're a full tithe payer based on what you would earn if you were working full time. And then the same amount of money I can allocate to whatever charitable causes that I want, even if it's like Sunstone or something controversial. Probably not Mike Norton, but I can donate to things and she can donate to things, and that we don't have to necessarily account for that. And then the amount of money that we were otherwise paying in tithing before, that we would together make a decision as to how to allocate those funds, and they would be charitable donations to organizations that we both had a passion for. So whether it's something like the Encircle House, or, you know, something like, you know, helping out a family, even if it's not a tax deduction or something like that, that we would agree on that together. And that's how we navigated that together. And everybody has their own kind of situation, but that's how we navigated that.
Yeah, I think that the tithing issue I see most frequently is when it's the wife that has, you know, left, gone inactive, whatever. And very often in the Mormon realm, we're, you know, that's stay-at-home moms, you know, women who might not be working, so they don't necessarily have their own income. Like in my case, my wife works, she makes more than I do, which is fine because student loans get paid either way. But when I stopped going, I actually didn't really ever pay anything that much. But I stopped paying on mine. She paid on hers. She was still a full tithe payer because it was her money anyways. And, you know, before it hit the bank account, at least. And then the federal government gets it all. So, you know, for us, that was easy. I've seen people do strategies where, you know, they save, you know, 5% because the 10% is for them as a couple. So, you know, the active person can take 5%. There's, you know, all sorts of different strategies out there. But, I mean, tithing can be a tricky thing, especially since tied to tithing is the temple and that sort of stuff. And the temple being very, very important to, you know, like in the Mormon church, when you start putting things like the temple and, you know, those sort of ordinances in play, can be tricky.
Yeah, and I think that's what I proposed, was a 5% split, and Scotty had a really hard time with that because he felt like, as patriarch of the family, as the sole income for our family, like he had a responsibility to make sure that tithing was being paid for our family. And going back to the putting a number on it, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is this to you? When I realized that like pushing the tithing argument was going to lead to our divorce, I was like, okay, this is no longer important to me in relation to our marriage. So I was willing to step back. And I think Scotty also might have had a little bit of a change of heart on that too, like realizing how big of a deal it was for us. I don't know. He's in charge of paying tithing now, and I don't know how often it happens.
I think I only pay half, so.
See, it works out.
I think that, you know, regardless of whatever the specific point of contention is, like the issue, I think we've already, I kind of hope that you guys are kind of seeing that the important piece is not even so much what the issue is, but it's that it's like a discussion. It's a you have to navigate the point. And it's the, too often communication, I mean, and this is not just Mormonism or mixed faith, whatever, it's just human nature. Communication's hard. It's hard. If communication was easy, the world would be a much different place, right? So communication's hard. And then when you throw in something like someone leaving, you know, like their religion, and still, and now the marriage contract has essentially changed because both parties went into it, eternal, you know, all that, and now it's looking different. Communication just got harder, and communication doesn't need to be harder. It's already bad in general. Like it's like it already takes work. And then when issues come up, it's just like this is the thing that's now the thing we're going to talk about. But the bottom line thing is being able to communicate well, and that's the area where I always suck bad. I will straight up say that I was bad. I started drinking. My wife had no idea. Officially, she kind of figured it out. She was very upset about it. She should have been. It was stupid on my part. Now, you know, we've talked it out, and you know there are certain rules in place that are fine by both of us. We've come to terms with them. We have our whatevers, you know, and it's been a process, right? It's not like we decided on a thing and that's like that forever. Originally, I couldn't have alcohol in the house. I couldn't drink in front of her. You know, now I have some in the house. I don't really drink in front of her at home, but like if we go out to dinner, I might have like a beer or wine or something, things like that. But you know, that's already been from a don't drink, I don't feel comfortable with you drinking at all. So I think it's important for both parties to realize that it's not always like the initial conversation is not like the end, right? Like they, like all things transition. I mean, if you can transition out of out of the Mormon church, you can transition along a spectrum on all sorts of other issues too. I don't know if you guys have had similar experiences with, you know.
So on the topic of alcohol,
yeah.
She started drinking without me knowing, and it really bothered me. And then she brought some into the house, and even after I had told her that I didn't want it in the house, mostly because I don't want it around the kids. And so she's very liberal, and I am not. I wouldn't say I'm like ultra conservative, but
yeah.
Fine, whatever. Needless to say, I tried to tweak a nerve because she had brought alcohol in the house. I was like, okay, fine. Well, then I'm buying a gun safe. And I will have a shelf in the gun safe that is for your alcohol, and the rest of it I'm going to put with my rifles and handgun, whatever I want to put in there. And surprisingly enough, she was okay with that idea originally. And I was like, dang it, it didn't work. I was hoping she'd say no and get rid of the alcohol out of the house. I still have issues with that. I would rather her spend more outside the house than to have cheaper bringing it into the house, honestly. But, yeah, so I guess I get to go buy a gun safe. This was actually a very recent conversation, so...
The questions are recorded as well.
You're a runner. You can make it up here.
This is why y'all should sit in the front.
I'm a runner right now.
Okay. So I'm the evil one in my family, in my relationship. So
how are you defining?
I can say whatever I want.
She writes fiction and satire.
One of my questions is. I'm having a very difficult time with my husband, and I'm sure he's having also a very difficult time with me. That's what the way he would put it. So my question is, how can I deal with the problem that he feels like I'm winning all the arguments? Like, he feels like every time we have a discussion, it's always he has to give. Because these were all issues that never existed before, and so whatever the issue is, it feels like I'm demanding that he give on the issue. So tithing, attendance at church, garment wearing, coffee in the house, whatever it is, he is the one who's being asked to make a compromise because it didn't happen before. And I don't know how, like, I can see why it looks like that to him, but I don't know how to deal with that, and I wondered if you had some insight.
I will have to say that I feel like I give a lot, and that I have to lose the arguments a lot. I don't know how we deal with it, to be completely honest.
About that?
Yes.
But is it, okay, here's my issue with that, is that the giving is in regards to another human. Like, you're not asking your husband to stop wearing garments. You're not asking your husband to drink coffee. You're not asking your husband to do any of these things. Like, all it is allowing you to be a separate human being. So is that really giving, like, to allow another human to be a human?
So I'd like to suggest a resource, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
So Dr. Christy Money has a website, and on that website she has a section called Courses and Workshops. And if you go to that, she has a free downloadable PDF called something like Navigating a Mixed Faith Marriage.
Christy Money,
KristyMoney. And that workbook will go through a number of different topics. So it kind of gives you an ability to kind of work through and go through things to find places where you have commonality and to find places where you are seeking differentiation. And that can be helpful. So the challenge is when the majority of the conversations are upon the negative and upon the stress, because they don't all need to be that way, because there are things that you agree on too. And you so using some sort of a format like that can help you find out the things that you're agreeing on. And the rest of this discussion goes to one thing that I was interested in talking about, and that is Brené Brown talks about having healthy boundaries, and that healthy boundaries actually increase a sense of belonging and trust, because you're not living in fear of being wounded. And so when I was deconstructing and in the grieving stages of anger and depression and deconstructing, she was my person, and I wanted to go to her and say, did you know that this and this and this person and that? And she felt like she needed to be there for my person, as my person, but I would end up wounding her and it would hurt our relationship. And she's such an amazing human being. She said at one point early on, she says, I know you're hurting, and I know that you need to process this stuff, and I know you need to vent about it, but it can't be with me. And so I want you to go find online communities or in-person groups or a therapist, and I trust you and this experience is real to you, and go vent and process those things there, so that when you're with me, you can be with me and you can be totally present with me. And I'm like, how do you even do that? Because I was such a black and white thinker, right? But she, that was helpful. So we've negotiated other boundaries, like, and they're not about control, they're about trust. So my wife's, a big boundary for my wife is that I don't introduce a lot of uncorrelated material to our 20-year-old daughter to try to crash her shelf, right? And that's a 10 to her, that I don't do that. And it's like a 7 to me that I do, so it's more important to her that I don't, right? But it's a 10 to me that she doesn't do things that wound my gay son and his partner. So I'm like, if Elder Oaks is able to get the family proclamation put up to be canonized, you know, and our son, no, I just as a hypothetical, and my son, our son and his partner see that as wounding. If you sustained that, my request is that you ask them before you decide whether you're going to sustain that as to how they feel about that. And if they're okay with it, then that's fine. But if they're not, I want you to choose our son over your need to sustain that. And that's a 10 for me. So whether it's individual topics or issues, or whether it's like using Christy Money's workbook or whatnot, we constantly go through this renegotiation of boundaries. Like, my wife wants our daughter to be able to be married in the temple, right? And I'm like, I'll totally support that, but I would like mortgage the house so that they could get married in Mexico, so that they had to have a civil marriage first, so that I could be there and our son and his partner could be there. And then the next day she can go to a Mexican temple, right? So that's a tender topic for us. And so to ask to address your question or concern is if all we're doing is focusing on where the tension is, then it's going to feel that way, that one partner maybe is acquiescing more than the other. And so we need to have conversations about what we have in common. And then when we talk about those things, we need to be able to set safe boundaries for each other and express, maybe it's on the scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 5 or whatever, if you don't like scales of 10, to figure out what's important to someone and why. And then we can feel safer having those discussions, is my take.
So in addition to that, to kind of build on that, I think another thing to realize is that, yes, you have a faith crisis, you have a transition, whatever, I don't know where you're at in the spectrum, but your changes are also changing the reality of your significant other. And for me, that was extremely difficult because now I was going to church by myself. Now I was doing, I had to be the spiritual provider for my family. And I felt like I had to be that because, yes, I'm still active believing Mormon. I feel that responsibility as a priesthood holder. I had questions about our sealing. I had questions about the covenants that I had made. If those were still going to be upheld or whatever in the life to come, those were all extremely difficult questions for me. And it does feel like I am giving, because for me, everything about my reality has changed in addition to hers. And even though, yes, she should be able to make the changes and it shouldn't affect everybody else, reality is it does. It affects everybody around you. And we all have to be understanding of that. And that's what we've had to learn to deal with, is her reality changed my reality.
Oh, yeah. I also just wanted to add about that. One thing is to not keep score with the relationship. Scotty feels, and absolutely rightly so, that things are changing and he's had to give a lot. But I, from my side of that, I feel like I've had my entire identity ripped away and kind of without my permission. Like, I didn't ask for a faith crisis. I didn't ask for this to happen to me. And I don't know how I could have stopped it, if I could have stopped it, or any of that. So, I'm hurting on my own. And then through my pain, I'm hurting Scotty and my family. So, we're both going through this. And instead of looking at it like this competition of like, oh, well, I've had to give up this and this and this, so now you need to do this and this and this for me. Like, just coming together in our pain and trying to work out like how to support each other through it and not necessarily just keep score of who's giving more.
And as things continue to change, your spouse is grasping at whatever they have left to hold on to. Whether it's callings, whether it's continuing to be able to go to the temple, whether it's being able to read scriptures with the kids at night or take them to church on Sunday, or even have the kids have the option to get baptized if they want to. Your spouse is going to be grasping for whatever they can to hold on to their own faith.
So for me, it's really expectations are huge. When we get married, we have this expectation and visions of what what marriage is, what married life will be like, what we will do during our years of marriage together. And it's not just about marriage, it's about life in general. And you take a new job, you think, this is maybe what it'll be like, this is maybe what it'll lead to. Anyway, I think those unwritten expectations that we all carry around about what we want for our lives, what we want for our lives together, what we want for our children, all of that changes when, a spouse goes through a faith transition. And I feel like that has been important for me to realize, when Scotty's saying you're grasping, you're grasping onto whatever it was, the old dream that's dying, the old expectations, all of that, there's no more ground to stand on. And I think Anthony was saying you were planning on serving multiple missions together with your wife, and then all of a sudden, now what do we do? All of those, it takes time, I think, for our brains to process and re-put together blocks about what life is and what my life can be and what it can no longer be, and to mourn the old and bring in the new. And then just in response, I feel like, why does often the active believing spouse feel like they're the ones that have to give? I hear a lot online that it's often the one who change, the one who kind of stays with the original marriage expectations, which is if you were, most of us were married Mormon, so the original expectations were that we should endure to the end in faith and all that, you know, the standard church narrative. We're the ones who are changing, so the ones. So it's easy, I feel like, for the faithful spouse to take almost play like a righteous card, like, hey, you're the one that's changing. I'm staying the same. But I don't necessarily support that as a, but I think rationally when I think about human thinking, and it's definitely like, hey, you're the one that's changing. And I don't know, I think there's some of that.
Yeah, so one of the best pieces of advice that I got early on from online support groups is that I needed to double and triple down on my expressions of emotional intimacy to my wife as my beliefs were incrementally changing, right? At least proportionately, if not double and triple, so that my wife could feel totally confident in my love for her and that my changed beliefs wasn't about leaving our marriage. It was about not seeing our ceiling the same as it did before. And so I did that, and fortunately I had those tools from the five love languages, and my wife noticed that. She noticed how hard I was trying in the midst of my pain and anger, how hard I was trying, and that made a huge difference in that level of confidence. But one part of our relationship where there was a big gap then is we shared spiritual and religious practice intimacy that went away. And so my wife, being the smart person that she is, she said, we need to find ways to rekindle and re-nourish spiritual intimacy. And we can do that outside the church. And so what we found in common is that we experienced spiritual intimacy as we were doing service to others. You know, the Matthew 25 type stuff, to feed the hungry and clothe the naked and visit the sick and the imprisoned, figuratively or literally. And so we actively sought opportunities to practice service to others and experience and share spiritual intimacy together through that. And so two examples is, in our stake, there was a 25-year-old man who committed suicide, a single man. And his single mother and his sister, who was a teenager, were left with tremendous mourning. And we, not by assignment, not even that they were on our ward, but we knew them through girls' camp and so forth. My wife and I went and we mourned with this mother and her daughter. And I helped, because I'm a financial planner, I helped alleviate all the financial concerns, what to do with the 401k and the life insurance and stuff, and set up money for a mission fund for the daughter. And we spent time with the daughter, just taking her out for donuts or something like that. And my wife gathered women together from this woman's ward, as well as other wards, to go clean the trailer home where the suicide happened so that the mother didn't have to do that. And it was an intensely spiritual thing to share, to mourn with those who mourn. And subsequently to that, the thing that we're working on right now is, when I was high priest group leader, there was a family in our ward living in this old, run-down, poorly insulated, in Billings, Montana, 1950s circa trailer home. And we were constantly doing repairs to this home, and we talked in the ward council about how could we maybe buy a different replacement home for this couple, for this family, and we couldn't do it because it would be too big of a fast offering expenditure, and if we did it for her then as a ward, then why wouldn't we do it for everyone else, and so forth. So we were stuck, a few months ago, I found out that the husband, who's in his 80s, is now in a nursing home with Alzheimer's, so he couldn't shut it down anymore out of independence or manlihood. And so there's a 25-year-old daughter who's disabled and a mother in her 60s, and she runs the laundry at the Billings Temple. So I said to my wife, we're going to get them a new home. And so I made some calls. I figured out how to do it. We're going to do an irrevocable trust that'll own it so it won't have Medicaid recovery. And my wife and I went out and introduced this to the mother, and she accepted it. Like, that's a precious experience. And we've raised $26,000 to buy a replacement trailer home. And we've engaged people on the inside and outside of Mormonism, people who maybe think I'm an apostate, have contributed financially to this effort, and they're going to help with manual labor. And people outside of Mormonism are doing it. And this is a treasured experience that my wife and I are doing together. I shared this with one of my friends, and he says, oh, yes, my wife and I, they're in a mixed faith relationship. We experience spirituality in art and liturgy and things like that and nature. And so we do everything we can to nourish spiritual intimacy through participating in those things. So I commend this as, you know, a model or an example. Define things that you have in common, and even if you have a difference in belief construct, it's possible that you probably still believe that the teachings attributed to Jesus bring you closer spiritually, and go do those things together and share those things.
Yeah, well, we have someone with a question. While they're coming down, I want to say two things. One, if you guys doubted how great Anthony is, that story right there is really good. The other is circling back to something that Scotty had said and Jonathan touched on. I think a lot of the time people have a faith crisis and they change quick. Whether it's a slow burn until they decide that they're to that point where they want to start changing stuff. But it seems like once they are like to that point, it's like everything needs to change. And I think that that's caused a lot of problems because everything seems to come rapid fire to the still active believing spouse. To them, it's like now it's left and right, change this, 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 and this. And so I think it's important for you know, those who, you know, are on my end of side, you know, like on my end of the spectrum, you know, who are leaving or have left, to, you know, keep in mind that, like, nothing changes overnight. I mean, if someone came at you wanting to change everything or seemingly everything just like right now, you'd be overwhelmed, right? It's like changes take time. And especially changes, as we've talked about, that have, you know, are seen as having these sort of like eternal implications potentially, right? So it's, you know, it's not fair, really, to either party to expect that you can just be like, okay, so here's my checklist of stuff that needs to be different now, right? Because the other person has to process it, just like you had to process all the information that, you know, that you've taken in, that has now led to you, you know, having a faith crisis or faith transition. Everything, like, it just takes time to process, and so I think it's important that people kind of pace that out when they're engaging these conversations.
Great. I don't want to stand, but the cord won't reach. Heart hugs to all of you. I am on the. I'm an active member. I thankfully have had a nuanced way of viewing the church for several years. And so I read materials often before my husband did. And so it wasn't a surprise to me when he was finding these things. And then I read alongside him things that he was reading. But I have a very mystic way of accepting spirituality. So for me, I still continue to use the vehicle of the LDS Church. I don't really have a question. I just wanted to express something because my heart was feeling it. I had a child in November of 2015. And we were planning to bless the child. And right before the blessing, there was this policy that came out. And it took my husband over the edge. And I remember, like, just having all those hormones that had just been released. And I just delivered this baby and him coming and saying, if other people can't bless their kids, I'm not blessing my baby. And I was just... I didn't think it mattered that much to me because I had seen kind of a change already, but I had just this, how dare you put something above our family? That's what I saw. And I felt in that moment, I never want to put the church or the against the church ever before my family. And so we have constantly said, are we putting something before? Am I guilty of putting the church ahead? Or are you putting your angst with the church ahead of our family? He didn't bless our child. A grandfather gave a beautiful blessing, and I was able to get a little bit of comfort in that. I still have a hard time seeing selfishness versus following your own heart and conscience. But I am trying desperately to yield to trust him and where he is and what he does. We've since then had children baptized by other family members. And the only thing that I was thinking to say is I had a real revelatory moment, or whatever you want to call it, inspirational moment, where I was looking at him and I was very well aware, like Scotty had said, and like you had expressed, feeling like I'm always the one giving. Like I'm the one that has to be okay now with you drinking. I'm the one that has to be okay with taking six kids to church. I'm the one that has to do all this. And I had like this, just in my face, Sarah, do you believe the things that you have taught about how to love other people? Do you believe in like this Christ and ethereal way of caring and giving beyond yourself? And I had this kind of shame of how dare I calculate the pain that I only know and compare to the pain that he is having. And ever since then, I've really tried and I've struggled, but to focus on understanding the pain that he has gone through and knowing that he has given, like you shared, he has given up so much also because of his integrity, because of what how he sees things. It's not really just his choice. It's really what his heart tells him. And as I felt myself change from that, I felt a real difference in the way that I could love and in the way that our marriage was, and all the peripherals of worrying about what other people thought, or if mom or dad, and the constant chaos of building bridges so that people still felt good about our lives and trying to show them we're still good. We're, you know, all of a sudden that just all kind of went by the wayside, and I felt empowered that I could now. And because of his, truly, honestly, because of his faith crisis, I feel like I have been refined and become a better person. And that I truly live and own the parts of the religion that I want to, and that they're mine. It's not governed by the LDS Church. It's my own true religion. So I guess I just want to share that in an effort to say fierce honesty. That's something we've always had. Art. Y'all, I'm so glad your marriages are great. Mine is like up and down and like so rocky. And there are moments where I'm like, okay. So I was like, there's all his grains. You know, I was like, there are moments where I'm like, we are buddies. And that is all we are right now. We're honest with each other and having a partnership with our children.
The whole story about us almost splitting was just a year ago.
Okay.
So it's okay. Not, it goes,
not that you need to advertise that.
It goes up and down and
yeah, it's an ebb and flow is what I say. But I feel like we're both committed to the journey and we're both committed to being honest with each other. And whether it's like an ebbing flowing of romantic, I just feel like it's a time for us to really, if you can embrace, like I'm trying to, if you can embrace the journey of the person who is in your sphere, and yes, it does affect what he chooses, does have an effect on what how my life circulates and how our children's life circulates. But I'm talking to myself, so thanks for letting me have the mic. If I can continue to focus on understanding him and seeing what he has given, then I can be less calculating of thinking that I am giving so much. And then I can really practice what I feel is spirituality and sacrifice. Heart hugs to all of you.
Go ahead. Oh, okay. That was amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you. While you were telling that to us, I actually had a thought that a couple of years ago when things were getting really rough for me and Scotty, back before when we were just engaged and we were like making lists of like our expectations for marriage and stuff. And one of the things we talked about was that we would each love God first. And when I got into this faith crisis and I lost my belief in God altogether, Scotty told me that he was going to continue to love God first. And that even though I knew that, and we had talked about that together in our marriage, or in before our marriage even, my feelings were so hurt over that, because here I was not believing in a God at all. And I was like, how can you put this God that I don't believe in before me, because, I mean, and it sounds so silly to me, like, because I knew that. I knew that, I mean, God is real for Scotty and important to Scotty, and religion is so important to Scotty, and how could I expect him to change that part of him just because I changed that part of my own beliefs? And I kind of realized that even though God, or even though Scotty says he will love God first before me, even, that doesn't diminish the love that he has for me. Yes, loving God is loving me. And I just had to get okay with that on my own, because that was my issue that I had to get over. That had nothing to do with Scotty and his love for me or his dedication to me or any of that.
So I'd share two really quick things. One, I shared in an earlier session, there's the story in 1 Kings of King Solomon and two women who had chilled babies, and one died and one lived, and the two women are arguing over the baby, and they go before Solomon, and Solomon says, oh, we'll just cut the baby in half, and the one mother says, okay, that's fine, and then the other mothers loved that child enough to have that child grow up in a different home. And it was hearing that story for one of my friends, where that it was a significant thing for that active believing spouse. As an example, do I love my spouse enough for them to be able to live and thrive, because they'll die in my spiritual home? Do I love them enough to live and thrive in a spiritual home that's different than me? And that concept was huge. The second thing that I bring up is with regard to ordinances. Everybody's situation is a little bit different. So one of my really good friends is in a second marriage, and there wasn't a cancellation of sealing after the first divorce. And the second wife is a convert to the church. So she joined the church. She married my friend, subsequently got sealed, and then learned about the complexities of polygamy and went through a faith crisis. And now it's so wounding to her to be a second wife that she wants to resign from the church, but it doesn't cancel the sealing, it just suspends it. And it's so wounding her to be listed anywhere as a second wife, that they're faced with discussions of, do I ask my active believing spouse to honor a request of the first presidency for a cancellation of sealing while we're living together married? Can you imagine how tender that situation would be? So I don't need to ask my wife for a cancellation of sealing. That's not wounding to me. But the empathy that I have for the pain for my friend and my friend's current wife, that's tender. So there aren't like pat answers that work for everybody. Like every situation's going to be a little bit different. And I don't know the answer for my friend and his wife. It's so tender, so incredibly wounding. And I hope that their marriage survives it, but it's so tough.
First of all, I want to say thank you to you for answering my kind of triggered and annoyed response with vulnerability instead of anger. That shows a lot of maturity. And maybe years of practice. I've been married for 22 years to an amazing man, and I am active in church. I just have more nuanced beliefs. You and I are probably not very far apart. But my husband is still in a place of fear. So he fears that I'm going to leave the church. He fears, for 22 years we've had this temple marriage and 5 children, and he has this fear. I told him I think it might be easier if I left the church and then just came back on my own terms. You know, just came back taking parts of Mormonism that I find are beautiful and real. And I love the way she puts Mormonism as my vehicle, because that's mine. Mormonism is where my voice is. I'm doing a lot of good. What my work is in groups of Mormons, and I do still have a lot of faith in a lot of different things, but my views are a lot more nuanced. But I'm just kind of coming into my own individuality, and it's really hard to be feel like I'm being squashed. Does that make sense? Even though I'm not doing anything, I just maybe sometimes won't wear my garment. Do you know what I mean? Just little things.
We all know what you mean.
But and I am still, you know, taking my children to church and still fully, you know, have callings and teach in Sunday school and sub in Relief Society. And I'm still doing all of those things my own way with my own beliefs. And I point out my own. I teach my children and I teach other children modesty without shame, things like that. You know, I've taken what I know and what I used it within the Mormon context. And that's what I do. But how do you move past the fear? Because fear, and even my husband understands, he's like, look, I've come to see that you and I are a partnership and we're dealing with this faith crisis together. But he has so much fear that it's hard not to be defensive. So how do you kind of get past that?
So you don't. I'm still afraid that Mallory's going to come up and one day say that she's sick of me and doesn't want to continue. That is literally every relationship. That's every work relationship you have that, oh, they're going to fire me because they're sick of me kind of a thing. Whatever. It doesn't matter. All relationships, all scenarios deal with fear. And we just have to remember that courage isn't the absence of fear. It's continuing on in spite of it.
So I would... Come on up, Jen. So increased confidence. You know, what are the antidotes to fear? Confidence, surrender to God, vulnerability, right? Wholeheartedness, gratitude. Those are the things that are the antidote. My wife and I will have discussions about, we don't know whether we'll still be married 5 years from now, but we know that we want to be married now, right? And where the fear happens is when we're worried about the future. But when we're living in the now and what's happening now, it can be rich, and fear can be pushed out with love and intimacy, spiritual intimacy, emotional intimacy, all the kinds of intimacy. And so for us, recognizing that the fear is often future-based, and that to the extent that we focus on what can we do to nourish our relationship now, then the fear goes away.
I can't reach. So I was a Protestant when my husband and I got married in 1991, and then in 1993 I became a Mormon. Meddy does not remember this, but she gave a prayer at my baptism. And it was a sea change in our marriage. I mean, it was an upending of all of the expectations that my husband had of what our life together would look like. We've been very happily married this whole time. And one thing that has been terrific for us, which I haven't heard here, not to say that it would be terrific for everybody, but is that he is very involved in his own church. You know, he has a vibrant faith life and a faith community of his own, which I deeply respect. But also, here's the bonus, has been an incredible resource for me, too. You know, the church that he's part of has welcomed me with open arms, and we basically raised our daughter in both of these places and felt that she had a home there. I mean, statistically, most people who leave Mormonism do not unite with another faith afterwards. That is very typical. But is that something that you've thought about or talked with your spouse about? Do you think it would help, or would that actually make it worse if you took the plunge and joined another religion? Would that be more of a barrier? I don't know.
I'm actually glad that she hasn't joined another faith. mostly because of the conflict that I think it would result in with raising the children specifically, and each one wanting to raise them a specific way. And Mallory, right, I guess I can let her talk about that, but...
So I think there's a couple dynamics. One that's I've heard in other sessions is sometimes when people go through a faith transition, they go from one level of certainty just to another level of certainty. So they're like super certain Mormon and super certain critical, you know, and that's not necessarily healthy. And I think what you're talking about or referring to are what are the things that we can do to be healthy and grow and have peace in our life and meaning and purpose and be okay with differentiation and things like that. And my sense is, my wife told me early on, she's like, there's nothing more that I want for you than to have peace in your life. And if you can do that in the church, that's great. And if you need to go to another church, that's great. And if you need to do that outside of another church, that's great. And she's amazingly nuanced. My sense or my bias today is kind of what Gina Colvin sometimes refers to, is I think you should listen to your heart and your body and your soul and your inner voice and do what you feel drawn to do, right? So currently I feel drawn to support people from the outside edge of Mormonism. And in the future, is that going to be in another faith tradition? Maybe. But I feel at peace and I feel meaning and purpose and connection and spirituality just listening to my inner voice and doing the thing that leads me to do and being open to that being something different in the future.
Yeah, for myself, I haven't felt the need or desire to look into any other outside religions. But I just, one of the biggest things, this is kind of a little bit just tangent to this, but is I'm worried about my children picking up on some of the cultural judgmental tendencies of Mormonism in regards to me. Like, are they going to look down on me? And kind of opposite, like, I'm not involved with another church, but I found that my faith crisis has affected Scotty's ability to be involved with the Mormon church. We had an incident where he was supposed to be called as the Elders Quorum president, and the stake president talked to me and talked about my faith crisis issues, and then later, like the next day, rescinded the calling to Scotty. And that was really, really difficult and caused some resentment between us because of that. And the culture of the church sometimes makes it difficult for, and they talk about how there are no callings that are more important than the other, but everybody knows that's not true. And we did just talk about that. Scotty's a primary teacher now, and it's difficult for him, the beard, if he would just shave that. No, I think it's really difficult for him to kind of, he has this stain on him that's because of me at church, like his involvement, his ability to participate fully in church is difficult because of our mixed faith relationship.
So I think this is one of those things that differs a lot depending on, you know, your locality, your congregation, your spouse's congregation, et cetera. When I stopped going to church, we were in what I like to call we were in the Bay Area. We were in the San Francisco area, and Mormonism isn't more true in coastal California, but it's more tolerable for those people like myself who are on a different side of things. You know, I mean, I was at the time, before I stopped attending, I was going to church in flip-flop shorts, a sleeveless t-shirt with Starbucks in my hand. So, you know, a couple of people looked at me sideways, but the bishop was like, as long as you're here and, you know, you're not, like, saying anything heretical, you're welcome. So, you know, in that sort of situation, and you know, my wife, again, is fairly nuanced, and she had a lot of people around her there in that ward. So for me, you know, I left. She still had people at church. She was still very accepted because, you know, even though I was, you know, an apostate or whatever, that didn't matter to the people in that ward. We were very lucky. It's not like that everywhere. So a lot of that sort of reaction, you know, that is really just local stuff sometimes.
It's not just a Utah thing, though.
Yeah.
Just saying,
yeah.
This, our calling reference that I just, story, that story that I just referenced for us actually happened in North Carolina. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really easy sometimes for folks who have not, who hear all these, you know, things coming out of, you know, Utah, as far as things happen at church, it's like, well, that doesn't happen in my ward. That's just a Utah thing. No, the stuff that sounds to, you know, us ex-post-Mormon folks, that's crazy. I can't believe that happens. Well, that wouldn't happen here. That's just a Utah thing. No, that stuff happens all over the place. Sometimes you just luck out and you're like me in the Bay Area. Yeah. As far as like other churches, you know, I personally don't have an interest in attending another church. Like that's me. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't. I even tell my wife, I was like, you know, theoretically I could go back to being an active Mormon. I don't think I would ever be believing the way that the church would want me to be, because I never was. But the reason I left was because I just didn't like how it felt when I was there. It just didn't work for me at the time. If at some point it worked later, largely probably LGBT issues and maybe saying, I'm sorry for letting, you know, for telling your people that you're second class citizens. It's been 40 years. Right. I might be able to go back and feel okay. Because again, I felt like it wasn't the right place, and I was in probably one of the most liberal wards in the country. So, you know, now that my wife is not attending, I've told her, I was like, you know, if you feel like you need to go to a church, go to a church. I will go church hopping with you. I will help you find the place that's going to work for you. Because as has been talked about before, it's important to me that she's doing what works best for her, because I don't want her to be unhappy because I don't go to church. I don't want her, and when I stopped going, I told her this, I was like, please keep going if that's what's working for you. And so she did for a long time. So I think it's important for, you know, and also I have to preface that, you know, I've kind of post-state that, I guess, was saying, because I don't necessarily have stereotypical ex-Mormon burn it all down feelings about the church, it's a lot easier for me to say that to her. I'm not like anti-religion for other people, just me. But, you know, I just think that it's, I, you know, certain people need religion, certain people need a religious community around them. And I think that those people should find the one that works for them. And, you know, for me, I found my people in post-Mormon support groups, online mostly, in-person groups, whatever it takes. But I think it is important that everyone finds the community that works for them, whether it's a religious one or a post-religious one. So we have time for another question, if you've got one. If not, any closing remarks? So I'll go first, because I'm holding the mic already. Sunstone is mine. When I came to Sunstone 2 years ago, I kind of came on a bit of a whim. I was still active at the time, and in our old ward, there was a woman in the ward who was a friend of ours who had expressed an interest in coming, and her husband was like, please don't go to that. You're going to get excommunicated if you go. And she was like, well, that's too bad. I'm going anyways. But she didn't want to come by herself, and my wife didn't really have an interest in attending, and then she also had her, she wasn't going to be able to get time off of work, and I decided to come because I love Lindsay Hansen Park. And so I came to Sunstone 2 years ago, and for the first time, honestly, in my life, I felt like I was in a Mormon space that was the right one for me. Because I feel like I can be a, insert whatever descriptors you want, Mormon. And it's not, when you're here, it's not about check all the right boxes. This is the doctrine. This is, you come here and you get to engage the way that works for you. And that's, so this is my thing. That's why I'm here 3 years later, still doing this. That's why I organize 3 panels this year. This is my spiritual home now. I've said it on Facebook and I've told Lindsay, I'm a Sunstone missionary and I hate missionary work with a passion that does not end. So this is mine.
So I, coming to Sunstone and a Mormon Stories Faith Transitions workshop 2 years ago pulled me out of the dark night of the soul. And the online groups gave me a reprieve, but it was the in-person community and interaction, a stranger holding my hand and telling me it was going to be okay, that pulled me out of it. And so with some friends, we created, I thought I was all alone in Billings, Montana. You know, there's only like 3,000 or 4,000 members in a city of 110,000. But we created a Mormon Spectrum group, and we now have more than 20 members. One of our members in our group was suicidal, actually hospitalized, until she found out about our group. And she told us it literally saved her life. So nothing else really matters after that, right? So Brene Brown quote on what spirituality is. She says, spirituality is recognizing and celebrating that we're all inextricably connected to each other by a power greater than all of us, and that our connection to that power and to one another is grounded in love and compassion. Practicing spirituality brings a sense of perspective and meaning. So those things. And they can be art, and they can be nature, or they can be my local Mormon Spectrum group, or it can be doing something else. But I find nourishment in doing those things.
Yeah, I also really found healing in online groups, but more so than anything was finding an in-person group when we actually moved to Utah. And that's what, I was very resistant to move to Utah. And then I was also causing grief and pain by constantly trying to talk to Scotty about all of my spiritual issues, that when I finally had somebody else to talk to about those things, I could stop putting that burden on him, and it was better for both of us. It was really very helpful to have that support group.
Just because I'm the active believing Mormon doesn't mean I don't get to talk about it.
You get to be the last speaker. Close it up.
Honestly, even since, really ever since Mallory started her faith transition, my own ability to find spiritual experiences has changed. Every time I listen to conference, every time something is said, I can hear her commentary, oh, that's a horrible thing to say. Like, I can pick out the things that I know would bother her, even if she's not listening to conference with me. And it's affected the way that I live my own religion, mostly because I care. So, you know, being able to go to the temple, honestly, is probably the place I feel most spiritual. Another thing that has become harder is the fact that trusting other people's testimonies. I hate fast and testimony meeting now, because I saw Mallory as somebody that was very, very strong in her testimony, and when that wasn't anymore, I trust my own testimony, but I really struggle to trust other people's testimonies. So it's just a way that I guess I'm broken.
So. All right, I'm sorry to close it down, but it is time. I did want to put a plug in for session 376, which is Navigating and strengthening a mixed faith marriage. Sorry. Go either way, I guess. It's in room 300B at 5 o'clock. So Anthony's on that one, so go on that. And then somebody asked about a resource, and I just wanted to put a plug in. Natasha Helfer Parker, she's got a booth down there. She's got a mixed faith marriage workbook. And we're in a mixed faith marriage also, and I... Oh, I just like all of them. Yeah, well, but
all of them. Yeah. Every resource.
But it's her presentation she did at a Mormon Matters retreat in writing, which I kind of claim as a believing one who was like, oh my gosh, our marriage is over, as what helped me see. No, it doesn't have to be over. Was listening to her presentation. So I am putting a strong plug in there. It's $10. So best ten, better than, you know, it's like 5 minutes of therapy cost. So anyway, so let's give them all a big round of applause. Good job, you guys.